I'm Austin.
And I'm Cloud.
This is We Watch Movies.
And today, a couple of amendments.
Hardcore amendments.
Okay, so this is not a normal episode. This is kind of going to be just, as I said, an amendment, or two amendments, actually, to things that we've already talked about in earlier recent shows. And one of them will be kind of like a miniature episode of a normal kind of form. But that'll be in the second part. In this first part, here in the First Amendment, we want to deal with some things that we may have said that may have seemed contradictory to other things that we've said and we didn't maybe justify in the circumstance. So in the Polaroid documentary, we made a great deal of noise about how their attachment to this thing, because it's an older form of doing it, is an emotional justification, not like a real like measure of quality. We touched on it a little bit in the comparing it to vinyl and collecting books and things like that. But one of the things that we didn't mention was we have talked about a great deal on the show about how much we like old style special effects and models, particularly, as well as other things, as compared often to CG effects, although CG effects could be really great and we appreciate both. But it may seem like, why are we holding on to this old way of doing things? And isn't it awfully analogous to models are analog and CG is digital in the way that film is analog and digital cameras are digital. So I just want to address that.
Well, I can have some justifications for it, because while in the past we have made comments about liking things that are practical,
stunts also, yeah, doing real stunts.
But at the same time, if it doesn't turn out good, we still say it didn't turn out good. Like, just because it's old doesn't mean we automatically like it. It just means that we'll probably appreciate it more. Because when you have some of these people who were taking these Polaroid shots, like, the photo looks terrible and they're acting like it's amazing. Well, if Jackie Chan does a stunt and it's amazing, it's because Jackie Chan did a stunt and it's amazing. And if you were to have a CG Jackie Chan, you'd probably tell, and it'd probably look really bad. That's why he does his own stunts.
The Matrix movies.
Yes, exactly. Because they looked really bad. But I think it was Krull, something like that. It was one of the older sci-fi kind of movies.
The Kevin Sorbo one?
No. It's the one with the dude who has the weapon that's like the 5 points.
Is that not Krull with Kevin Sorbo?
I know which one Kevin Sorbo is. No, it's like just the dude. He has like, it's like a throwing star, but it's huge and the blades fold out. And it's like a space movie. That's why I said sci-fi.
I'm not sure then.
But like, there's this lady and she's holding what is supposed to be CG fire. And it is terrible. And they could have used real fire in some kind of capacity. And it probably would have looked better. Well, we may have had to shot it differently.
I mean, there's very famously in an early episode of Lost, the single worst special / visual effect in the entire series, and it's fire off in the distance across a field that Sawyer kind of looks over at, and it's terrible because it's not real fire. It's cheap television budget in the mid-2000s CG fire, and it's really bad and it's really distracting. It's surrounded by a rest of a series of otherwise really, really good effects and really good everything else also. But so you, I don't see why they couldn't have like shot some fire and composited it in as terrible as it was. I think they must have just not had time or something.
They did not have a properly trained technician.
Now we will. Well, they blow things up from time to time also, but it's not an important effect, so that it probably wasn't worth the time or money. It's just really, it's really, really bad. But we're going to, at some point, probably fairly soon, but we need Kenny for it, so we're still waiting for him to set up his new studio in the new house. So bother Kenny on Twitter or something. get him moving. But we're going to do the Need for Speed movie as a contrast to the Fast and Furious movies. And we mentioned it. I mentioned it at least, because have you seen it?
No.
Okay. So I'm the only one that's seen it. On the Fast and Furious episode, they did the same thing that the Fast and Furious movies do in that they did like real stunts with real cars and real people and did as much of it as they could for real. But for some reason in that case, and it may be story reasons that just set it up on a bad leg, where it just, knowing that and then seeing what happens makes it difficult to watch in like an emotionally traumatic kind of way, where like people are getting, like people are in danger or people are getting hurt in car accidents in the story. Not for real, because they didn't really kill people doing the stunts, but there's something about the realness of it and the way that it's constructed that makes it, instead of being the, oh, that was really exciting, the way it is in the Fast and Furious movies, to, I am having trouble feeling okay about this, because, and it's really weird. And so it may be that stunts are not always the answer, or real effects are not always the answer either, depending. And we'll have to talk about that a great deal more on that actual episode, because you haven't seen it, so we can't really discuss it.
If it looks bad, then no.
Well, no, it doesn't look bad. That's the thing. It looks really good, but there's just this discomfort with it. That And it's not just me. Like, it happened to me when I saw it, and then I looked around, and other people were saying the same thing, and critics were saying the same thing, so it did have this effect on other people. Now it won't on you, because I've primed you to resist it deliberately so that you can say it didn't affect you, but
I probably would have resisted it anyways.
It's
I don't know, like, things that are supposed to make you feel bad just kind of make me feel annoyed.
Well, no, see, the thing is that it's not supposed to make you feel bad.
Okay, so.
But it does.
Huh.
Just like all of the time when it, like, there are moments when it is supposed to make you feel bad because major characters die or get hurt or something, but there are, most of the time, it's just exciting car racing sequences at this, and but it has that, like, I feel bad about this feeling that never happens in the Fast and Furious movies. Now, there are emotional moments in those movies, as we discussed, but not because I'm afraid that the characters are in danger because I know that the stunts are real. It's just a weird thing that I've never had happen before. So is that the whole thing we're going to hang the hat on, is the, what looks better? Because I don't think that's necessarily.
Well, it is what it looks better, but better doesn't mean good. Because with the fire things, like, those look bad. There is something they could have done that was better. Because, like, what, like, situationally, things are going to change. So what's better might not be, like, the thing that looks the absolute best.
But
it's like the remastering of the old Lord of the Rings. And then, like, you can start to see, like, this kind of falls apart over here because this looks really good, but you can tell that CG now because it's...
Oh, like, you mean, like, the, like, higher definition or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, little stuff like that. And it's just like, okay, like, yeah, having this redone for higher quality does kind of tear away some of the things that used to look good, but now some stuff looks better than others.
I do kind of wonder how that, you know, we already look now on, although it's 1 year from being 20 years old, on the, you know, CG Kung Fu Neo, and think, well, that doesn't look that good because it's kind of smooth and the movement's a little weird, and you can tell. And then even later stuff where there's the ridiculous slow motion close up punch of the agent with the fist, and it's just, the face just mushes like nobody's business, and it wasn't good enough yet to do that. Like, it looks good. It looks really good. It's really impressive, but it doesn't look quite real. Because this is still, what was Matrix 3? 2003 or 4,
four?
Maybe?
I think it's 2004. Because
like the first one's 99, yeah. And I don't remember how much time they took between. But I wonder if, in the way that we look, people sort of appreciate 8-bit era games and 16-bit era games in a way that like PS1 era, like early 3D era PS1 and 64 games, people don't appreciate in the same way because it's just really blocky and terrible. It doesn't bother me, and I still appreciate them because those are the ones I came up with. The, you know, 8-bit and 16-bit was before me. So if you're like 35 or something, then you're old enough to have been, to have gone through that, and those are the things you associate with your earlier times, and you can appreciate them. It's like trying to hand someone a 64 game now, and they're like, I don't know, why is GoldenEye really good? The frame rate is bad. There's all kinds of things that you can point at it that people now are just like, why did people like this? It's like, no, you don't understand. Like, this was the best that we had, and it was great. Like, it was better than anything that had come before. But people don't really look at those games in the same sort of way. They don't hold up as well as the farther abstraction from reality of 8-bit and 16-bit do. And I wonder if old practical effects movies will, because they have held up to this point to at least a large extent, if this whole early middle period of CG effects is going to be the like PS1 for movies, where we're just going to look at it, and because we can see it in better quality now, that it's going to look, it looks fake in a way that a model never looks, because a model is still a real actual thing, even if you realize, oh, actually it isn't a spaceship that's 300 feet long, it's actually 16 inches long, because you can tell where it's matted into the scene or something about it makes it look not quite as convincing as it's supposed to. But then if something is just like smooth and weird and just like obviously fake in like an uncanny valley kind of way, that seems like it holds up less, even if the like the quality of it could have been like better viewed at the time that it first existed.
Well, there was if anyone listening to us knows, but there's the angry video game nerd, James. And several years ago, for October, he did like a monster marathon, and he covered all the Godzilla movies that were out at the time. And one of the comments that he does make, because you do have Godzilla 2000, and Godzilla 2000 is like the first Godzilla movie, Toho from Japan, not the 1998 one, that uses one scene of CG to show you Godzilla swimming. Other than that, like all other movies that had Godzilla in it was always somebody in a suit.
Suit man.
Yeah.
Suit man technology.
And the thing is suit man technology, while you can't, you know, it's obviously fake. Saying it looks fake is dumb. We know it's fake.
Yeah, but suspension of disbelief. You know, go back and listen to the Gojira episode from several months ago, or well, from March, I guess.
Yeah,
and listen to us froth about the enjoyability of the various effects.
Yeah, and but they do look good. Like as people in suits, they look really good.
They do. They do.
And
look
then
really
you
good.
Compare that to that CG scene of Godzilla, and it doesn't look
does it work?
Good. It's not. It's it looks like Godzilla, but it's a bad scene. But then even years after that, like they still have like a dude in a suit, and the suit still looks good. And yeah, it's a Godzilla movie, so what do you expect? But you know, that's the thing. And then you lead up to the 2014 Godzilla movie, and I know people complained about his feet and the fact that he was thick. But, you know, it's like he looked good. Like, he looked like he could be real. And that was CG. So there's a huge difference between the 2000 and the 2014.
Yeah.
And so it's like you have the Godzilla swimming in the water, and then you have, like, Neo super fight scene that's all CG, and then you have 2014.
In the rain, isn't it? It's, well... So, I mean, you can have there now. There, I suppose the argument might be there isn't anything, which is what we said. I think there isn't anything that you can do with a Polaroid camera in terms of capturing an image, short of the being able to hand a physical object to someone.
Yeah,
that you can't do with a digital camera.
You can still take a picture,
but there are
and
things
you can still take that picture from that digital camera
that you can do with a digital camera and mess around with it with a Polaroid
and
camera.
Then bam, now it looks like a Polaroid.
There are things that you can do with CG that you can't do physically in a practical way.
Yep.
You could not make Michael Bay Transformers, the first one.
Or any of them.
Because they did try.
Ooh.
They tried, like, and they did have, they have a physical Bumblebee, like, full-size thing. And you do see it in a couple of scenes when it, they have him on, like, the flatbed thing. After he's been knocked out in the Los Angeles River, and they're spraying him with the fire extinguishers of whatever to keep him cold, that is the real physical one, and you can actually tell it's actually kind of distracting because it doesn't look exactly the same as the CG model ended up, and it doesn't look quite, it's not as shiny.
Yeah.
But the effects for the Transformers in the first one, and then they're good in the third one too. They get a little weak for some reason in the second one. They're not quite as good. And then I haven't seen any of the Wahlberg ones, so I don't know. But they look really good.
Yes,
they look
do.
Really good. They look really real. They look like metal. They shine just as they're supposed to. They look physical. You totally believe that they're there, and you couldn't do it with anything physical. There was no way to make that movie that exact way. And I suppose there are things that at least people have said that they couldn't have made until technology caught up. You know, James Cameron talks extensively about how he had to wait a number of years in order to make Avatar because the technology wasn't there. I think you could have made a version of Avatar that would have been really effective and really good.
Yeah,
using older style effects. It wouldn't have been exactly the way that he intended to make it, but it would, or he wanted to make it, or what he imagined. But it still, I think, you would have worked. And I guess you might could have made a Transformers movie, but... Oh, there is this line, though, where it starts to be... Where they're not sure... Like, CG gets good enough that then they can start to use it. And Jurassic Park is kind of the marker line.
I was going to say,
where,
like,
they tried to do it with stop motion. You can watch... If you have any of the collector's edition DVDs or the Blu-ray sets or anything...
Uh-huh.
They had, you can watch the test footage of them, and they tried so hard. They had the best people in the world. It was the height of stop motion animation, and it just didn't look quite good enough.
Yep.
And so then they started looking around, and they were like, "Let's see if the computers are good enough to do this yet." And it turned out they mostly were.
Well, like,
there's a little bit of weakness here and there in original Jurassic Park, but for the most part, it's amazingly high quality for 1993, which is why everything after that point has no excuse at all except for money and time.
Well, like,
to not be good
a lot of Jurassic Park used real animatronics.
Well, they did, well, too. They used real ones.
Because, like, the T-Rex,
mix in between.
The Triceratops, and then the Velociraptors that they used for the kitchens.
Mm-hmm. But the dinosaurs are real. Like, my hands are shaking as I take off my sunglasses and the theme plays the first time. Like, that is nothing. None of those dinosaurs are physical in any way.
Yeah, that's all.
All
CG.
Of that is
the Gallimimus running,
and it's amazing. Gallimimus shoes.
Gallimimus shoes.
It's so good, and it's so effective. You know, I will tell you. Go back to whatever that is, episode 7. I think it is. A listen to the Jurassic Park episode. Cloud's audio is really bad because he wasn't recording locally yet, and it was over Skype. But it's a fun episode. And there are things, I think, probably that we still call back to occasionally that are from that early on, including Gallimimus shoes.
I think it's episode 10.
Is it 10?
It's Jay.
It is 10. Yeah, 7's Godzilla.
I think so.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was on that one, too.
Right, you were on that one, too.
I mean, obviously. Yeah. It'd be kind of sad if I wasn't. Oh, speaking of Godzilla! Guess what we did? We watched some trailers, and the Avengers trailer's out.
Yeah, well, you say we watched some trailers. I watched a trailer. You watched
I watched
trailers.
I watched two trailers.
I haven't watched the Godzilla trailer.
So we're going to talk about the Avengers trailer for like just a second.
Just a second, yeah.
Just a second.
This is not an amendment. There's only two amendments.
Okay, so for the Avengers trailer, how do you feel about it? Like,
I'm so excited.
See, I'm a little excited as well, but I'm not excited because of the trailer. Like, I'm excited because the first one existed,
the trailer,
and now I'm waiting for it to finish.
The trailer didn't dampen my excitement.
That's good.
I'll
That's good
that.
To hear.
So what they showed, I was like, okay, I'm on board with all of this. You still have me at this way up here. but
Ant-Man.
I mean, I'll just say here, because
Ant-Man, he's gonna save the day.
If they pull this off, it's already super high. Infinity War is like way, way super high. You know, if we had Dave's poll, it would be way, 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 way up here. If they pull this off, Captain Marvel is kind of over here to the side because it takes place at a different time, at least for most of it, although they may link it in some way towards the end. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I don't know anything. We don't know anything. We don't know anything. And
speculation.
And then we get Endgame, which doesn't spoil anything at all, although they claim that it did before. I think they were just being bogus and secretive for bogus reasons. But if they pull this off, that is a combination is like going all the way up because it's almost there already. Like it's so high of like it doesn't even go in the fishbowl because it's just like it wouldn't even be fair. And that's really extreme for me to say, because normally I don't rank favorite things. That's the whole premise of the favorite 50, and that there's 100 things that are in no particular order, because that's not how things you like actually work. They shift around. And but it's gonna be like really, really, really high. Like it's gonna have to fight with Network to decide. And they're probably gonna tie, but I'm so high on Infinity War.
Yes.
And someday we'll have to discuss it in a great deal of detail. But
I think
after Endgame is out for a while and we've had time to sit with everything.
Yeah. And spoiler news, we're going to be working on some specials, because whenever we started the show and we started doing picking the movies, I was like, we're not doing Marvel movies. We're not doing them because we're too far behind. And so we have decided
in the specials,
we have decided that we are going to bring special podcast events for the Marvel movies. So as we get this developed, we might tell you some more.
It's still a really broad work in progress how we're going to break it down.
But we're going to bring it to you.
It
we know you want it.
What I will tell you is it will not be a 20 movie. One episode franchise collection,
no.
The way that the rest of them, because
starring Ant-Man,
way too many things to talk about all in one thing.
I want
too many to watch and keep in your head all at once, even to even try to do a show.
I want that audio clip of like Paul Rudd and Michael Douglas, like the interview thing where they're like cam boning Ant-Man. I want that Ant-Man.
I love Michael Douglas so much.
Yes.
Not just in Ant-Man, but just in general.
Yes. All right, let's get to the second thing.
Okay, so
the second thing is super important now.
This is the Second Amendment.
Second Amendment.
Which, basically incidentally, because I just thought of it tonight, deals with weapons. So,
yeah.
Big joke here with the amendments thing. So back in the
second one,
in the day after episode,
which was about nukes. If you didn't go see it, it's out.
You should. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fairly proud of that episode. And I think it's an important one of our episodes. And also go and listen to it, because it looks like not as many people have as typically do. So get it. But I mentioned very briefly in that the Butter Battle book, as both the Dr. Seuss book, which came out the year after The Day After, and then the animated special, which came out several years after that, exists and dealt with this in a very simplistic but seemingly difficult for people to get, because the Carl Sagan perspective on the special after The Day After, which we talked about in the second half of the day after episode, really consists of this is stupid, and there's no like this the standoff is stupid when both of you have weapons that can wipe out everyone. It doesn't really matter, and it's all just bogus, and it's nothing that we're fighting over is important enough to kill everyone on the Earth. And Dr. Seuss felt the same way and was very frustrated by what was going on in the Cold War. And so he wrote the Butter Battle book and really simplified things down, made it about a super trivial thing. Which side do you butter your bread on? Which, I mean, the Zooks are kind of maniacs, because why would you, like, it's going to drip probably or something. So it's a bad idea in the first place to butter your bread side down. But it's not worth going to war over, for sure. It's just an odd eccentricity, like people who wear their belt buckles off to one side. But, and it's, like, weapons progress in size. Although the thing that actually differs in the Butter Battle book from the real thing is that the Zooks, compared to the Ukes, actually do have better weapons. Like, the Ukes show up and they're like, hey, this new weapon, and the Zooks show up and they're like, yeah, we got a bigger weapon than that. Which is what we thought was going on with Russia. But we had really bad intelligence a lot of the time, and they were not really ahead of us basically ever, either in quality of weapons or in number. But it was, of course, in their interest to
boast,
maintain the fakeness that was true, and we already believed it. And so although there was a certain point where members high in the government did realize that the intelligence was bad and acquired better intelligence, and then didn't really tell anyone because that would ruin the whole, like, weapons project thing and keeping the public focused on hating the communists and so on. So there was a point at which the government did know that the public didn't, but it's very, very late in the Cold War, and it's largely what led to the, well, why don't we, like, stop this, sort of, and talk about it, and then it turned out that the Soviet Union just collapsed and it didn't matter. But
when we were watching this, I was just thinking, yeah, but give it a second and the orange guy will just kind of dissolve into nothing.
Well, and the thing that happened is that the book came out in 1984 and was somewhat controversial because it sort of takes the this is stupid kind of stance, which is not necessarily, at least in a lot of people's eyes, the American opinion, the people who are on the side of some of the other people who are on the panel. And Canada apparently didn't like it. There were some libraries that, like, pulled it off the shelves for a period of time, although it's hard to say how many. And then the television special was produced over a period of several months in 1989 and was set to air and did air on November 13th, 1989. But on November 9th, 1989, the wall fell. And so the effectiveness of the cliffhanger in the TV special version kind of was a moot point.
Yeah.
Because Will C had already resolved itself into the wall just went away, which was not, like, nobody had thought,
like,
at that
wait
time
a week that for it was, like, the next episode.
that it was going to happen that quickly or that suddenly, or that it was maybe ever going to happen at all. And it turned out it did. And so it sort of neutered the TV special. But even so,
it was still made.
It was still made. But the main point is, while we talked about, and while as a kid, I always really liked both the book and the cartoon on the same copy of the VHS tape that I still have and that we just watched it from. Because I didn't watch it on TNT in 1989 because I was negative 4 months old at that point, almost exactly. And I sort of, like, got kind of the point of it, even though at that point the Cold War was over, but just, like, war in general and, you know, escalation or whatever. I sort of had a little, like, a vague understanding of what he was trying to say. But other people, older people, adult people around, didn't like it and didn't understand. And lots of people, lots of the adults that you would think would understand this, didn't get it. They either didn't like it because they disagreed, or a lot of people just didn't get it. And they hated because it didn't end, because it doesn't resolve. They're just there on the wall holding their
grapes. of mass destruction.
What are they called? Big boy boomeroos? Bitsy big boy boomeroos, I think. There's a smallness modifier on the beginning of it.
They are red grapes.
They are red grapes.
They are red grapes of mass destruction.
And they, well, they did have, what were they? High explosive sour cherry pits that the, one of the Zook's weapons fired. Because all of this is like really, really goofball. And
our planes will sprinkle
blue goo
in them.
Which, all right. They're planes, but they walk. Which is the only thing I had a problem with as a kid. I'm like, but they don't fly. They're not planes.
Watching it will kind of go by, and I'm just thinking of Liberty Prime. Democracy is non-negotiable.
But
just waiting for like the tail to like fling part of the goo at them. It's like, oh no, we don't get any of that. All right.
But it didn't end, and that really frustrated a lot of the adults, and they didn't know what to do with it, and they didn't understand it, and so the easy to see, like, this standoff is stupid because we both die if either of us drops the big boy boomeroo, they just didn't see. They just didn't get. And so that's the main reason, apart from just that it's another example of what was happening at the time. And we'll get to the other threads and... what's the other one? Testament, the other two TV special movies besides The Day After that came out around the same time at some point. But the easy to see point, the Carl Sagan point, and even some of the other people on the panel, and the central premise of The Day After, of we can't let this happen because it'll just like ruin everything for everyone, and it doesn't matter who starts it. Which is the only element I think that isn't here, the who starts it, because they both kind of start, like, the wall already exists when we come into the story. It does seem like the Zooks start the escalation, because he's just walking along with his switch, and then the slingshot comes out, but, so it's a little less equal to the sides than The Day After was, but it's, almost all of the rest of it is there, and just the idea that people just didn't get it, which must have frustrated Theodore Geisel even more, because he was already frustrated, and so he's like, I'll write a book and explain it to everyone, and they still didn't get it. Now, as a TV thing, as an animated thing based on a Dr. Seuss book, it is, from the ones I've seen, and according to the ones that were made while he was alive that he saw, according to him, the most direct accurate translation from book to cartoon of any of the cartoons made from his books, and it, except that they added songs, which aren't there in the book because books don't sing, but everything else is very, very dead on, including the end. But it's just a shame no one got it. Now, the one other point I want to make is that whole sequence where they're like down in the bottom of the headquarters and the secret labs, and with the suspiciously German seeming lackey types.
Yeah, they
where they're developing the Bitsy big boy boomeroo. Since I was a kid, and still even this time when we watched it, just like scares the hell out of me. Like, it's so, like, there's something about it that just keeps me just so, so on edge. And some of it is this kind of creepy voice that particular song is in, that we don't know who it belongs to, because it's not one that appears anywhere else. And probably because it's thematically based on producing nuclear weapons, which is a thing that already, it puts me on edge, as we've discussed various times before. And I don't know, maybe just like some of the creepiness of the process. Now, this is directed by Ralph Bakshi, who is known for his unsettling animation. So, although that's the only time he maybe really gets to display it, because most of the rest of it is just straight adapting from, like, it looks like the book is just moving. It is a really just straight adaptation.
Yeah, because like
sequence just
like I've seen my fair share of like Dr. Seuss animations, and I would say like this one is pretty spot on. So if they're gonna say, oh yeah, it's almost a direct adaptation, I can believe it.
Yeah,
just like the quality of the work itself, the style, even when people walk, like that's what I would expect them to look like to be walking if the book.
Yeah.
Really did move.
Well, and there's some terrifically Seuss-looking just things, like when they go to measure him for the first weapon, and just they put it over the front of him, and the tape measure just, like, curves around, like, the shape of the front of his head and his nose and in, like, down his body, and it's just, like, it doesn't, like, do it in, like, any kind of natural way. They just stretch out a tape measure, and it's instantly the shape that it needs to be, which is such a Seuss kind of image. So, are we giving this thing stars?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not. Now, there is one thing that I was a little curious about, because I thought the start of the movie was the grandpa talking to the kid about the time.
Oh, yes. This is confusing, and I've never been able to resolve it.
And then it's just like, at the end, it's still the grandpa with the grape of mass destruction. And the grandson's there, and it's just like, wait a minute, I thought you were telling the grandson about the story of when you were at the standoff, but you're at, it's
which
like...
Which is what the beginning is, but then is the voice of the grandson says in voiceover, that's when grandpa found me, he grabbed me, he said, and that, like, that's not what happened, because the beginning of it is he says, on this such and such a time, he took me out to the wall and told me the story. So it is a weird timeline jump that I don't think there's any way to resolve. It's really, really odd. Because it would almost seem, if it wasn't for that voiceover, that Grandpa was the grandson of like some earlier grandpa that was there during the war.
Yeah.
But that's not the way it's presented at all. And he wasn't carrying the grape of mass destruction in the opening. So, like, the whole rest of the thing, from the production of it, he's carrying it, and it's, like, buzzing with electricity, and everybody's going into the shelters. Like, it's so heavy and so effective. Oh, he even takes a jab at one more thing that he disagreed with, and that he basically does a takeoff on the Pledge of Allegiance for a bogus thing, and...
You know, while he was going to the wall with his grape of mass destruction, all I could hear in my head was just somebody whispering, I think there's oil under here. And then just like Fortune Sun playing in the background, and then just like America in choppers just wasting the land. Like, all right, occupation time. Ugh. All right, let's see. The people have chicken legs, and they wear pants that look like blue fur. Super mega.
They're basically wearing pajamas.
Yeah. Giant thing that you need two elephants for.
Which German. Look exactly like Horton.
Yeah.
It's like there's one kind of Dr. Seuss elephant. It looks like Horton.
The Great Wall of Butter and singing songs about butter. Okay, so what happens if someone is like, okay, well, we won't butter it on the bottom because that's communism, but what if I want to butter it like on the sides too? Like, I just want like tons of butter on my bread because capitalism. Like, what then?
Double butter?
Yeah. Like, I want two servings of butter, but there's not enough surface space on the on the top, so I put it on the sides.
Yeah. Well,
true American innovation.
They already spread an inordinate amount of butter during their Butter Side Down introduction song, because they just keep just slicing off pats of butter and spreading them on. Really soft butter also.
Yeah.
It's been sitting out a while. Or it's margarine and they didn't tell anyone.
It looks like actual sticks of butter.
It does.
I haven't seen sticks of margarine.
Well.
I personally have not seen it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I just haven't seen it. Because anytime I see sticks, it's like supposed to be butter, or it's like mostly butter, and then like, oh, it's like 80% butter, but we have like other stuff in here, blah blah blah, whatever.
Well, I mean, there's no such thing as margarine anymore.
No, it's
anyway.
Vegetable
what
spread.
I mean is vegetable oil spread, but which does come in sticks.
All right. So the last thing I have is it comes to me with great sadness, but also great excitement. Because I mentioned earlier, I said we. I meant to say I, because there's not two people living in me. I saw True trailers, and I saw the one for Avengers, and it was pretty cool. Like, whatever, you know, like, I'm gonna go see it. It's whatever. And then I saw the Godzilla one, and oh boy, was I excited, because I know not a lot of people were overly pleased with the 2014 one.
We liked it.
We did enjoy it, yes. But this one, unless it is surprisingly an amazing flop, this one is looking to be really good for like a monster fight kind of movie, because you know we have like four plus maybe two more giant monsters in it. But at the same time, they have various character design changes. So like you have King Ghidorah, and he looks great. Mothra looks great. Rodan looks great. They have changed Godzilla up a bit. And he's still thick. He a thick boy. But he looking pretty good for a thick boy. And so, originally, this Godzilla King of the Monsters was supposed to come out in March. And I was going to be super excited because it was like, hey, here's a brand new Godzilla movie for us to do in March for Monster March mm-hmm. Madness. And nope, it's got pushed back till May. So you will have to wait until May of next year to actually get a proper review from us on it. And you will. I guarantee it. But it looks so good. It looks so good. I'm excited. Like, people over here being like, oh my God, the Avengers. Like, shut up. I'm going to go see Godzilla. Like, I'll obviously go see Avengers first because it comes out first. But I'm more excited for Godzilla. Leave me alone. All right, I said my piece.
Now we have to go. Now we have oil to go steal from some, you know, I don't know, sub-Asian continent country or something.
With their Great Wall of Butter and their communist bread. We're going to get that oil for the red, white, and blue.
So that's all. All the amendments for today.
For today.
What do you have to say about the Better Battle Book? We'll see you next time.
Later. I got in my head, I'm trying to think of like making a parody of this song for the Butterbridge. It's like, ah.
Butterbridge?
Butterbridge. Ah, like I'm thinking of Bridge of Spies and this damn thing. Ah, Cold War. What if America had grapes of mass destruction? Just little slingshots and...
Well, this one time on Star Trek, Scotty was really excited about a warp drive the size of a walnut. So, I'm sure they would have been really excited about nuclear weapons the size of a grape.
What is this for? Like, a spaceship for hamsters?
It's for ants. That's what it's for.
Yeah. The war between the butter breaders is getting intense. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I mean, it did.
In America.